Hello, and welcome to Helvetic, a podcast. I'm David the Good Cop.
And I'm Joe the Bad Cop.
Helvetic is a podcast where we...
Go.
Helvetic is a podcast where we discuss theology and design and the intersection of those two topics. Joe, do we have any feedback this week?
Yes, we do. We have some feedback. Chris over on the Tech Reformation Slack channel for us, the Helvetic, hashtag Helvetic channel on Tech Reformation Slack. He said something about something that got scrolled away because David had to be posting stuff all over the channel. Yeah, you can scroll back a little further. Too far. You're here, a good show from Chris.
Are you going to read little
Another
comments
good episode,
like that?
Like, Gentlemen from La Rosa.
Gentlemen. Nice.
Sorry, just teasing a little bit. Anyway, so some good feedback from people there, but Chris also sent us a link to a Stranger Things text generator and did Helvetic, a podcast in the Stranger Things font, which was...
Which looks good.
Yeah.
I mean...
totally does.
Well, we can... All right, Joe.
The kerning made one of my eyes bleed. But aside from that, it looks super good.
Well, that's what I meant. another little piece of feedback I mentioned on the last episode. Actually, I just kind of said the words, Francis Turretin, like that guy, and didn't really explain why I was referencing Francis Turretin. So there is a fellow who... masquerades on Facebook as Francis Turretin, and you can friend him if you would like. I don't know if he friends everybody. Probably he does, because he friended me, and I don't know him at all. But anyway, he was watching our live feed last week, and he had a comment about the blink tag, and I was just so excited to see Francis Turretin commenting on our post. I am aware, because I said that he wrote the Institutes of Eclectic Theology, I am aware that it was the real Francis Turretin, who lived in the 1600s, who wrote the Institutes of Eclectic Theology, and not the Facebook person. Although, that being said, have you ever seen the Facebook Francis Turretin and the Francis Turretin who lived in the 1600s in the same room?
No.
I'm not trying to raise any conspiracy theories here, but I have this conspiracy theory that I'd like to raise.
By the same logic, these particular water containers... The Contigo ones are wonderful elephant repellents because literally never seen the two together.
Well, that's actually advertised. But anyway, Joe?
Yeah.
What is our main topic this week?
We're talking about...
into the mic.
Yeah, we are talking into the mic. Hello. Hey, David's mic.
Into your mic.
Oh, my mic. the topic this week is the discussion of, is it better to start with actual pen/pencil and paper, or is it better to start with Photoshop, or are there advantages in starting with each one? So with the modern generation, with a lot of people having access to something like Photoshop, is it better to just start with Photoshop for your drawing, for learning how to draw, I mean the basics of drawing? Or is it better to use pen and paper?
Yep. And I brought this up because I, as a lot of listeners know, if you've listened to the show before, you know that I have been taking classes with Liberty Online. And one of the things that they really tried to drive home is that it's really important to become proficient at drawing, and specifically drawing like with a paper and with paper and a pen or pencil.
Or a paper and a stack of pens.
It would be hard to draw with a stack of pens.
Mm.
Anyway, for me, I came into design through the digital realm, which I feel like is not altogether common, but perhaps it's becoming more common. I actually heard somebody report, he's a teacher, and he reported that all of his high school students, the ones that are graduating, I think this year, have only ever used an iPad as like the like they've only had classes on in their high school career. They've only had classes on how to use an iPad. So the world is this crazy changing place. But anyway, all of that to say, I did not really learn to draw growing up. I mean, I learned as much as you have to in like an art class, but like you only go so far with art classes as a kid, I feel like. And art drawing has always been a struggle for me. So hearing my professors at Liberty tell me, not even my professors, but the books that I was reading at Liberty tell me that I needed to learn how to draw well in order to be a good designer, that was kind of off-putting because I find drawing to be extremely challenging. And admittedly, I've gotten a bit better at it, but I still like find it just extremely challenging. It's kind of like, Joe, you've described trying to use Photoshop and how you spend time thinking about the tool instead of thinking about what it is you're doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think like when I was in school, right after the Brontosaurus bus would drop us off, I would get out my tablet and chisel. And anyway,
I don't understand why. What's?
Oh, yeah, that was a joke. I'm not actually that old.
Ah,
yeah, I know. A true story. No, but the biggest struggle that I've had with the, you know, with using the different design tools and design apps is just getting, and I've said this, it's become something of a mantra on the podcast here, but just getting the tools to get out of my way. They're, I have a vision in my head. I have an idea in my head. I can actually draw it out on paper and get very close to what I want. And then translating that into a digital format in like a really usable, viable digital format, has been a huge challenge for me. Huge, huge challenge for me.
That's because of your tiny hands. yeah, and that's interesting because for me, actually, there were a couple of times where I was doing homework where I was supposed to sketch the thing out and then create it in Photoshop, and I did it the opposite way. I made it in Photoshop, and then I took out a pencil and paper and was like, okay, now that I know what it is that I want to do, I'm going to sketch it. Which is not how I was supposed to do it. But I literally was so frustrated by all my attempts with paper and pencil that I just gave up and moved straight to Photoshop. Yeah. Whereas for you, it's pretty much the opposite.
Right. Yeah. In fact, I've been working on some logo stuff like for La Rosa, a regular listener here and a coworker of ours. One of the things I did actually at one point along the way was work on tightening up a drawing tight enough that I could take a picture of it so that I could then, import that picture into, not Photoshop, but, actually Affinity Designer in this case, and have that as an image behind my main drawing layer, to use as a reference. Because I was having a hard time, what'll even happen with me with some of the, even if I'm using the tools there, things will turn out like more cartoony or something than my actual hand drawings are turning out, as far as like, I'm trying to make something that has a certain authenticity, and then I'll get these things that are so like, they're like, I don't know. Anyway, it's tough to get that same feel through digital.
Right. And you're talking about using the pen tool. And I guess this is something that we need to clarify, because like, it really depends on what kind of design work you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know that anybody would say that if you're trying to create, well, maybe they would. I don't know. If you're trying to create, so Joe, let me ask you this. If you were trying to create, you've got a kind of blurred out bokeh background with three-dimensional text, block lettering kind of thing, as an advertisement that just says, you know, sale 50% off. And maybe the background is supposed to be like a blurred out library, right? Like, mm-hmm. Let's say that was something that you were supposed to do. Would you try to sketch that out first, or would you jump straight into the, you know, I don't know. You don't do a lot of work in 3D, but would you jump straight into Photoshop or whatever tool you might use to try to do that? Maybe it's not even 3D text, but it's like beveled text.
I would probably still sketch it out.
Hmm.
Yeah, I really would. Which would drive you absolutely up the wall. I totally get.
Well, yeah, especially because like I know that in like, let's say that I was trying to sketch it out. At the very least, I would do it on my iPad because in the phrase sale 50% off, the letter E repeats itself three times, just you know, right off the top of my head. And I don't want to have to write out that letter E and do all the block letter treatment and the 3D stuff to it with my pencil three times. Like, if I can do that once and then duplicate it, you know, copy and paste on the iPad or whatever. For reference, I have an iPad with a Apple Pencil. I would at least want to do that to save some time. But yeah. you would just use paper and a pencil.
I would just use a paper and pencil.
Like an animal.
Like an animal. Like I was raised by wolves who had papers and pencil and no iPads.
And thumbs.
And opposable thumbs, yeah. What sort of wolves were you raised by? Wait, everyone isn't raised by wolves?
I don't know if my thumb's opposable. I've never tried to argue with it.
Oh, yeah. It's totally opposable. Trust me. I have tried. I still think... if you look at, like... take a look, for instance, at any behind the scenes, the mini documentaries they do behind the scenes of something like a Pixar movie.
Yep.
And
they have the sketches and the storyboards.
Yeah, all the storyboarding, exactly. And they start all that stuff, most of that stuff. And there are some people that do storyboarding in a digital medium. And I think when you get really comfortable with you guys have a drawing tablet here. A drawing tablet working in Photoshop. Some people are very comfortable with that and can do very natural stuff. There's some YouTube channels that I follow occasionally that they do sketching and drawing lessons and things like that. And one of the guys started trying to do a drawing on paper to then use as a foundation for one of his drawings. And he spent about 5 minutes on the drawing. He's like, okay, I'm done with this. He immediately went over to Photoshop. He basically took a picture of it, imported it in, used it as basically a very, very rough starting point. But he was so much faster and more efficient in Photoshop than he was with paper.
And was this with like a Wacom, you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's using like a Cintiq, actually. So he had a very nice, 20-odd inch Cintiq.
And this is so interesting to me. And I really want, like, on this particular episode, I'm really hoping that we get a lot of listener feedback, specifically from designers, because there are so many different ways that you can come into design, especially depending on your field. For example, you could be a UX designer, I feel like, and have very little knowledge of aesthetics, very little knowledge of what people would consider art. And really, most of what you're doing when you're creating user interfaces is thinking through how things should be laid out to preserve hierarchy, to communicate functionality, affordances, that sort of thing. And in terms of all of that, you would rather grab a mock-up template maybe in Photoshop of UI controls and move them around on the screen and then hand everything over to an actual UI designer who would create all the custom buttons and widgets and checkboxes and all that.
Right.
But I wonder if UX design is a field where it's more common to not like drawing, or if most UX designers, and I'm just this weird, weird oddball, because I feel like as a designer, I don't weigh heavily toward the aesthetic. I tend to weigh heavily toward the function or lean in that direction.
Yeah. That's interesting. I think that would put you more kind of on the UX side of design rather than graphic design.
Yeah. Yeah, which isn't to say that like I eschew graphic design, and there are elements that I find really interesting. But specifically the drawing thing has always been not very appealing to me. So
yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
So like with me, the thing that I find that that works best for me in when I'm doing hand drawings, the thing that I really like about actually just pencil and paper for like, especially for the initial thought process of designing, for example, a logo, is I can just throw a ton of ideas out. And it forces me, one thing I run into when I'm actually doing the digital part of the design, and I'm getting to the point where the tools aren't such a pain for me now, but I'm still not somewhere... I'm barely above a beginner as far as just I've been around them for a long time, so I know a level of what I'm doing there, but I feel like I feel really incompetent sometimes in the use of those tools. But what I find when I have the digital medium is I have a tendency to take something that I've started. I'll have a design. I'll have it like kind of laid out. And then I grab that whole thing, copy, paste, and I've got another copy of it. And then I can play with some different aspects of it. And I think that that can be very helpful, especially when I'm at a point where it's really refined or getting close to a finished product. Because then I can be like, well, I'm going to try a different font. I'm going to try some different, just some different subtle things here. But I like the initial spot of where I'm going. I like the initial layout here. However, when I'm in that initial stage is when I'm trying to figure out what I'm actually doing there, then, you know, nobody has to be trained. I mean, obviously people need to learn technique and learn skills as far as actually being able to draw well, but nobody has to be trained how to use a pencil and paper. I mean, I can literally hand a pencil and paper to my 18-month-old boy and he will just start fiddling with it. He'll just start making marks on the paper and be delighted that there's marks on the paper and start, you know, doing things with that. And there isn't this big initial hurdle that you have with some of the software programs that are available for graphic design. Some of the programs are just, there's such a wall there just to get to where you can do anything.
For sure.
Pen and paper or pencil and paper doesn't require a learning curve of how to use the actual instrument. I'm not talking about the skill with which you apply the instrument, the ways in which you do various drawing things or shading things or whatnot. I'm just talking about the basics of putting marks on paper.
Like you can grab it, even if you grab it with your fist and just like,
right,
you know, make circles with your elbow.
Right.
You're still going to put marks on the paper.
Yeah. And by the same token, you know, you take a look at some of the, especially the simpler drawing programs. Like, I think it's really interesting. I like Paper by 53, and we had some back and forth. We were talking about paper versus paper and pencil versus pencil. But I like the app Paper by 53 on iPad. I think that's, I actually enjoy using that particular drawing program. And I think one of the reasons I do is it's a lot like just natural media.
Yeah, you've got like five tools in front of you. You tap on one and then you start drawing.
Yeah. And David, and rightly so, likes Procreate, right?
Yes, I do like, I like paper as an app. What I don't like, I like that UI. And it's interesting because it's not like I like complicated UIs that are hard to understand.
Right.
What I like about paper is that it's easy to understand. What I don't like about it is that I can't even add layers.
Yeah.
One feature would make it perfect for me. Add layers. Well, I guess I'd also want to be able to export that as like a PSD.
Right. And a little bit more like control over your canvas size would be nice.
I could even work with a fixed canvas size as long as I can get layers and just get it over to Photoshop, because then I can scale things. Like when you're at Retina, you can, I mean, obviously, you know, if you're trying to export for 4K or something, a Retina iPad screen resolution is not going to be good enough. But for a lot of cases, I think I would use it maybe even more than Procreate. Because one of the things that bugs me about, like, one of the things I really like about the Apple Pencil is that you don't have all the levels of control over sensitivity and like brush, you know, how sensitive the tilt is, how sensitive the pressure sensitivity is. You don't really have those settings unless like Procreate does have that as a setting. And I actually like the idea of it behaving like a physical instrument. Like it has these qualities. You press this hard, it does this, and you really can't change that, because then you're trying to get used to something and you're not always changing it. Because when you're able to change it, you can have that field where it's like, I started to get used to it. Then I thought, oh, it might be better if it's like this. Then I had to get used to it that way. And you know, a week later, I was sure that, no, maybe that wasn't better. And then I went back to the other one and got, you know, all of that.
Yeah, you're chasing your tail the whole time.
So that's one of the things I don't like about Procreate. But what I do like about Procreate is that you have the ability to export. You can pick your canvas size, you can export as PSD, and you can do layers.
Yeah. And I find Procreate, I think it's a good app, and I've definitely done some playing with it. But I find that there's so much there that it's difficult for me to just use the app.
The interface again is mostly inscrutable.
Yeah.
There's a book about it. They like, have you seen the iBooks book, Joe?
No.
It's from the creators of Procreate, and like, you basically don't know how to do most anything unless you read it.
Are they professionals?
What?
Are they professional creators of Procreate? Thank you. I'll be here all evening. No, I won't, Sarah. Don't worry.
Sarah, my wife, actually just pointed out on the chat that Procreate has the best watercolor brush of any of the apps that she has used.
Well, she says paper, actually, has the best watercolor brush.
Did I say? What did
I say?
You said
Procreate.
Paper.
I'm just saying.
I'll just go back and edit it, and then you'll sound wrong.
I'll sound like a jerk. David is stupid. And you can just put that in anywhere with me just being mean for no reason.
Yeah. So yeah, anyway, all of that to say, like, it's not that I like Photoshop because it's complicated. I actually just like it because that's where I really learned. You have this kind of, I don't want to say story because that is cliche, but you have this narrative. No, that's worse.
Once upon a time in a land that time forgot.
When it comes to creating visual things, I think that everybody learns on something. And I happened to learn on Photoshop, which is why, like, Photoshop is second nature to me. I almost think in Photoshop, if that makes sense. This is the case. Like, when I'm thinking about how I would manipulate an image to make it look better or whatever, I don't just think in, I would want to nudge those pixels over there by this much. I think I would want to nudge them using the smudge or nudge them using liquify, depending on what effect it is that I'm going after. Right. Or I would lighten that, but I would use overlay to do it, or I would use linear dodge, or, like, I think in those terms.
Yeah. And in fact, people who are as competent in Photoshop as you are, or like another friend of ours, Scott, the people that are very, very familiar, very competent in Photoshop and use it all the time, sometimes it's just super frustrating for someone like me to talk to them about it. Like, I just want to do this. Oh yeah. Well, just da, da, da. And they're like four steps ahead of you. Like, dang it.
It is.
Can you write down the steps? And you don't even, like, honestly, you know, I mean, as comfortable as you are in that app, you're not thinking about the intermediary steps that you needed to take to do that. Cause it's like, well, obviously you're going to, you know, add a layer, you're going to do this, and
right.
Then boom. And I was like, there was one point along the way where I was talking with Scott and he's like, oh yeah, you can't directly edit that unless you select the layer. Like, you can't double click on that thing and get it to edit unless you select the layer. And I guess there is a change in settings where you can actually make it do that, but it's not default and it ruins other things if you do change that. And I was like, it was this epiphany of like, oh, that's like this totally different thing that I'd missed the whole time trying to learn Photoshop. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and like, knowing Photoshop as well as I do, and I don't want to come off as sounding like I think
so
I'm
amazing.
This expert or whatever, but like, knowing Photoshop as well as I do know that it is terrible. That, like, the UI is really, really bad. And actually, as I've been...
What Sorry, are you? I'm making you glow.
Joe is moving the lamp to shine on me.
You're welcome.
Actually, and the other thing is that as I've been learning After Effects and recently Cinema 4D, I've been realizing that a lot of the ways that Photoshop does things are actually really, really, really dumb. And Photoshop is actually for compositing, and even though, like, what it's known for is compositing, that is the idea of, like, taking an image, making parts of it transparent, and then putting it on top of another image. That's compositing, basically. Or maybe you have an image that's already partially transparent, where, you know, like if you wanted a circle, like, fonts are by nature partially transparent, right? The holes in the letter forms are transparent. Anyway, you take that and you put it on top of something that's compositing. And After Effects is just so much better for it. And I'm told that Nuke, another app, is even better than After Effects for it. But for example, in Photoshop, one thing that I can't do is create... I can create an adjustment layer and adjust color data. But, like, I can't create an adjustment layer and apply to that adjustment layer a Gaussian blur so that everything below that layer is blurred. I have to... Like, if I want to do that, I have to select everything, duplicate it, create a duplicate layer, and then blur it. Blur that layer. But then if I want to adjust something that was under the Gaussian blur, I have to delete the Gaussian blur layer, make the change, recreate the Gaussian blur layer, and then paste it. And I realize there are kind of really, really hacky workarounds to make that work better in Photoshop, but I don't like any of them. I don't know where I was going with that. I guess all I'm trying to say is Photoshop is not perfect. It's not the ideal tool, but for me, it's the one that I know. And so often, even if I plan on doing something in After Effects, my mock-up stage will take place in Photoshop. Sometimes just using the mouse. Sometimes I'll... I have an app for iPad called... What's
that app?
What?
The app that lets you draw on your screen.
Oh, AirPlay? No. Oh my gosh, what am I thinking? There's Duet, and there is... I don't have my iPad with me right now. AstroPad, that's it.
AstroPad, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can basically use your iPad as kind of a Cintiq sort of a thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I have an app called AstroPad that lets me use my iPad essentially as a Cintiq. Draw on the iPad, and it shows up on the in Photoshop, and it carries across pressure and tilt data and all that. Sometimes I will use that.
So permit me a terrible analogy. This is one of the big struggles that I've had trying to learn Affinity Photo. Okay, so Affinity Photo is a new... It's been out about a year, I think, now. And Affinity Designer, maybe 2 years, something like that. Somewhere in that ballpark. Anyway, these guys have been out for a little while, and they're really, really well-designed, really nice applications that are direct competitors to Adobe Illustrator and to Adobe Photoshop. That's who they have in their sites. That's who
also to
at.
GIMP and Inkscape.
Yes, also to GIMP and Inkscape.
Those guys never saw it coming.
Yeah, they were really upset. anyway, so here's the bad analogy. So if I want to learn how to use Photoshop, no, not Photoshop, I'm sorry, Affinity Photo. Because Affinity Photo, having Photoshop in its sites, has made sure that someone who knows Photoshop can jump in and use Affinity Photo quickly.
Right.
And so they've had to take some of the stupid things that Photoshop does, and they're trying to do them better. They're trying to make it a better workflow, there's some specific areas where they've changed it, but they carry across things that are unintuitive. What it's like is like when people who are King James Version onlyists, I'm not talking someone who prefers the King James, I'm talking about people who are King James only.
Oh, I already love where this is going. I love it.
Say that, you're a Chinese person. So here's how you get the Word of God. First, you have to read, obviously, you have to learn 1611 English or 1789 English, but who's counting? You have to learn archaic English so that then you can, well, you have to learn English and then you have to learn archaic English so then you can use this translation so you can actually get to be reading the Word of God. By the same token, as someone who's trying to learn Affinity Photo, it's like, well, you have to learn Photoshop and learn the quirky kind of wonky ways it does things that shouldn't do necessarily the way it's supposed, you know, the way that makes the most sense. And then you can go over to Affinity Photo and we'll give you all this information about transitioning from Photoshop to Affinity Photo.
Yep.
Drives me up the wall. And they're not close enough that I can take a Photoshop book and actually follow it in Affinity Photo. That doesn't work. They are just close enough that I can follow it in Photoshop and then I can go to Affinity Photo and try to figure it out there. Oh, madness.
There is a training series on Lynda for Affinity Photo.
Have you tried that now?
Yeah.
I haven't. That's pretty new then because that's really new. Cool. I'll check it out. And in fact, that's going to go with my recommendation. So I will remember that later. That's not my recommendation, but it dovetails nicely. Yeah.
All right. So I guess the reason that I brought this up, I already gave the reason I brought this up, but I'm going to give the real reason I brought this up, is that I'm kind of insecure about being a designer. And what I mean by that is I feel like anybody, probably everybody who does a job, there's some level of insecurity. We could talk, a good episode would be about imposter syndrome, Joe.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I know Joe gets that all the time because he never has any idea.
I should not be doing my job or this podcast. Go on. This is not my beautiful house.
So anyway, I get that, and it's especially easy to get that, I suspect, because I don't have a degree. I learned design through the back door. I learned first I learned Photoshop and learned how to manipulate images. Then I learned design principles through reading blogs. Then I learned actual design principles and better theories of design by reading books. And now here I am. Like, I feel like I've come in completely backwards, and at no point did I really learn drawing. Now, I've taken a class on drawing, I've gotten a little bit better at it, but it's not something that's been ingrained into me my entire career, and it's something that I tend to eschew. Gesundheit. And
David eschews ossification.
I just want to know Have you ever seen the rain?
Wow. No.
No. I just want to know, is it the case that if I were to learn to draw, I would become a better designer? I mean, not just like incrementally, like adding a skill necessarily means that you're probably going to become a better designer. Like there are lots of skills that I could learn that would make me a better designer in all the other areas because they're all related in some way. But I mean, like, is that going to be the point where it's like, oh, now I can finally be creative? Like now it has become, you know, 50% easier. Like 50% of the time, it's easier for me to come up with a creative idea because I've learned to draw. Is that a thing? Or is it really like a lot of people are saying you need to learn to draw because that's how they learned? Does that make sense, Joe?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And the answer is,
you know, Joe's just going to tell me I need to learn to draw because he's the bad cop.
Yeah, I'm the bad cop. No, honestly, I do think it would make you a better designer. But I don't know that it's necessarily going to be the epiphany, the silver bullet that you're looking for. I think it is. There is something about, for one thing, another big challenge that I found in working with digital media or mediums in trying to do design is the amount of distraction that's available to me constantly, and also the amount of distraction that's pinging at me, even if I'm not out looking for it, like, you know, notifications and things like that that'll come through on the iPad or come through on my computer and will pull me away from the actual design process that I'm trying to figure out. Whereas, of course, with a real pencil, a wooden pencil, not a wooden pencil with electronics inside of it, but they make a wooden one that's an electronic one. So I'm just trying to be so clear that I'm no longer clear. Anyway, so
with C.S. Lewis once said that if you see through everything, you can't see anything.
Yeah, honestly, I think that's Superman's problem.
This is totally the point.
Think about it. If he has x-ray vision the whole time, he's like, here's a glass of water, Superman. Ah! He's looking through it the whole time.
He makes that exact noise.
Yeah.
Wooden pencil, Joe.
Wooden pencil. Yes. So true. I'm sorry, what were you saying? No, I think when you're using a pad of paper,
it's funny how you're trying to talk about how there's no distractions.
It is easier to not be distracted with those items because there are no notifications. There's no electronic, you know, dinging at you. Especially if you take off stuff like your Pebble or smart devices. Like if you have your phone in your pocket while you're trying to do this design work, you're like, oh, I won't want to be distracted, and your phone's vibrating in your pocket. Wah, wah, wah. It didn't work. Anyway.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Is it now? Is it really? Boy, that's a real smart thing you just said. I'm going to refute it.
No, I don't disagree. Like there are things that you can do on your iPad or on your Mac that will make it more distraction free. I think an iPad Pro with an Apple Pencil with airplane mode turned on, for example, would be not entirely equivalent, but it'd be a lot easier to say no.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So here's another question, right? Like I will agree that learning to draw, as a matter of fact, I have found that learning like shapes and forms and like learning to draw to really draw, not like, okay, to draw a cat, you draw a square and triangles and a circle, like not like that kind of drawing, but like I have a book on my desk here.
Drawing with the Right Side of the Brain.
Drawing with the Right Side of the Brain.
Yeah, I have that too.
Which I thought is a pretty good book. Mm-hmm. Joe can probably recommend better books on drawing.
Not offhand. I think that's a great book. I think it's an excellent book.
But so I've read that, and it teaches you to think of drawing as thinking in shapes. And there's a very real difference between when you say, I'm going to draw a refrigerator, and you think, I'm just going to draw what I have in my mind as the impression of a refrigerator, and saying, I'm going to draw all the shapes that I see right now. And when you draw all the shapes that you see right now, you end up with a refrigerator that has perspective, that has a three-dimensional depth to it, that has all of these other things. And if you just draw what you think is a refrigerator, you end up with a, you know, one square, you know, one rectangle on top of another. Right. So that has taught me a lot And I'm sure that as I get better at it, I will become better as a designer, because when you start talking about things like gestalt theory, you're really talking about shapes and forms and proximity and relation, and knowing how those things exist in the real world is going to help you, and becoming familiar with how those things exist in the real world is going to make you better able to manipulate them in theory or when you're creating interfaces or whatever that is. I can agree with all of that. Here's my real question then, right?
Okay.
What about drawing specifically with a paper and a pencil?
Yeah. Because what you're discussing right now does not require a pen and paint, a pen and a piece of paper.
Exactly.
It requires. That's more talking about just learning drawing technique, pushing yourself to do drawings where you're really looking at the world around you, not just kind of looking in your mind's eye and drawing what you think a thing looks like. In fact, that's one thing that'll really throw you off. And one of the ways that I learned to draw better, a big improvement that I made on drawing, is when I took a sculpture class, because we had to do a self portrait. We had to draw a self portrait, and then we had to do a sculpture of a self portrait using a mirror. And the thing that the instructor had us do is, like, you'd if you started sculpting your face, trying to do this kind of sculpture of your face, everyone ended up with these strange things that were round in the back and flat on the front. Like, your forehead was totally flat and your nose stuck out and your eyes went in. And I mean, literally everyone in the class was struggling with that same problem. I was going to say to a man, but there were several females in the class too.
Well, they were struggling to you.
I don't know what you meant by that.
Anyway. I was just referencing the last time you said to a man and then got, anyway.
Yeah. To me, a man, they were struggling. We're struggling, Joe. But one of the things the instructor said is, he said, okay, what I want you to do is take your hand and put it on your forehead, and
right.
then take that same shape, hold that shape and put it on your sculpture that you're making, and realize how very different, how vastly different it is than the shape that you made. And kind of realizing that, okay, I'm just doing these drawings, or I'm doing this in a very 2D way. I'm not thinking of the actual form there. I'm not thinking of the actual mass there. And I'm not really looking. I'm kind of taking a snapshot in my mind, and then I'm trying to do that. So that's kind of a technique issue rather than materials, which particular materials you're using.
Yeah, and that's I just want to tag off of that and say, I've learned that because I've been trying to do 3D modeling, and I've learned that it's basically the same thing. I mean, and I'm not saying that sculpting wouldn't be an even clearer demonstration of it, but when you're trying to model something, you realize, like, oh, this has all kinds of bumps and crevices and things that I just didn't even realize were there. I perceived as being flat, or maybe I didn't perceive them as being flat, but I wasn't recognizing the existence of these three-dimensional extrusions.
Yeah, in fact, like the typical, typical is not the right word. The uncanny valley that's discussed in 3D, specifically in CGI stuff. You do here's this computer-generated movie, and everything looks too perfect, and it looks wrong because it's too perfect.
Right.
It's not really looking at reality. It's looking at this impression of what reality would look like. And you see that too with there's a lot of terrible CGI. I mean, if you have Netflix, you can see a lot of terrible CGI, especially if you watch the kids' channels. That's right. And it's because it's this kind of let's just do the quickest impression we can of a cartoony thing. And not really think of what's really there, how to make it everything looks hyper realistic, but it doesn't have the details to make it really realistic, look real.
Yeah. And this, I think maybe, cause we need to get back to the idea of specifically paper and pencil, but I think maybe a good takeaway from this is it's a really good idea if you're a designer to take a drawing class. I took one. I'm probably going to take at least one more. I took drawing one. I'm probably going to take drawing two at some point. And I can tell you that it has really, really helped the way that I think about shapes and form. And it's actually extremely challenging for me to think in terms of shapes. It's actually, I am very much a left brainer. Is that the right? I'm very much more of an analytical person. It's very hard for me when I'm trying to draw the shape that is someone's eye to go, no, that's not what an eye is. An eye is an almond shape. And it's very hard for me to just, nope, just draw the thing. Just draw the shapes you see.
Draw what's in front of you, right?
That's extremely challenging for me, but it's been very beneficial learning to do that, and I hope to get better at it. But specifically, Joe, paper and pencil. Important? Not important.
I would say specifically paper and pencil, I would still say is important.
Analog.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think because everything that you're trying to do with Photoshop, everything you're trying to do with these different apps on your iPad are all at some level or another trying to mimic this physical process. And they're more or less removed from the physicality of it in one way or another. It's kind of like you go, well, you know, I love that the pencil, you don't have to think about the layers of pressure and the tilt. Well, with a real pencil, there are significantly more than 4,096 levels of pressure available to you.
Yeah.
And there is an infinite degree of tilt, and it will behave differently, and the tip will break off sometimes, and you'll have to work around that. But I think that having that experience, that practice with the actual physical medium, even if you, at the end of the day, are more comfortable and happier working in the purely digital medium, I think it will inform your sensibilities about how some of the things that they're trying to imitate on the digital side. That's what I would say.
I see. So it's not necessarily, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you're saying the benefit to learning to draw on a paper and pencil is not necessarily that you become a better designer, but that you maybe become a better artist because you understand your tools better.
That's an aspect of it. I think now this is for me, someone who's very comfortable with pencil and paper. I'm more comfortable with pencil and paper than anything else. So take that from that perspective.
Even his family.
Yes. Yes. They know that. And it's sad. Anyway.
You can pray.
Yeah. That'd be great. But I would say that using a pencil and paper, there is a direct connection. There's no, even like, okay, Apple Pencil, for instance, is the best stylus I've ever used. I think the Wacom Styli on a Wacom tablet are probably the second best. I think they're very, very good.
And specifically, you're probably referring to the Cintiq so that you can see what you're drawing.
Yeah, the Cintiq, I've never used one, but I'd imagine that's really, really excellent. I've used Intuos tablets, and I think that they're very, very good. The real problem with them is not being able to see what you're drawing, for me. But even with an Apple, pencil, sometimes you're going to lose your Bluetooth connection. Sometimes, I've used them. Yes, sometimes you do. Not very often.
You're a QA engineer. Good. I've never lost my Bluetooth connection.
All right. So sometimes I lose my Bluetooth connection.
Actually, quick tip, because I saw Sarah struggle with this. I don't know if this is why you either lost your Bluetooth connection or thought you did. If the tip on the Apple Pencil comes a little bit loose, because it twists on, if that becomes a little bit loose, it breaks contact with the... this is just an illustration of what you're saying, but it breaks contact with where it's supposed to connect to the pencil, and it'll seem like the pencil isn't working, even though it is actually connected. Okay. So just make sure you keep that tight.
Yeah, that's good to know. The other thing is your iPad's battery can be dead. The other thing is you can run into all these little things that can stop you in the middle of a creative process.
Sure.
And with a pencil and paper, it's just... you have it. You have a pencil, you have a paper. If the pencil's, purely digital person can look back at me and say, well, you can only work in one color. Your pencil lead can break. I just mentioned that, right? It can be dark, so there can be limitations there too.
I will say that if your pencil breaks and you don't have a sharpener, you're up a creek without a sharpener.
You're up a pencil creek without a sharpener.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, drawing becomes pointless. Keep going.
That's ridiculous. I think I've made my point. That's kind of where I was going with it.
All right. Well, this is really interesting to me because it seems like what we're saying, and I would agree, is that specifically the art of learning to draw, whether it's digital or analog, is really going to help you as a designer understand just shapes. I keep coming back to the term shapes, but shapes is really important as a designer, regardless of what you're designing in architecture, in, well, as long as it's visual, right? Like, drawing is really, really important there. Paper drawing is really important when it comes to learning to draw better, or it may not be really important, but it's at least fairly important. And so in some aspect, it does aid, it will aid you as in trying to become a better designer, but not necessarily as much as just learning to draw, period. Or yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
So Joe and I are in agreement, but there are a lot of designers out there. There are a lot of designer professors out there who may and maybe should disagree with us. So that's kind of what I was really hoping to get out of this episode is to start a conversation to discuss this with designers and find out what you guys think. I'd really especially be interested in hearing anybody who's come kind of down my path where you learn digitally and then you learn to draw. Either digitally or analog, but you didn't learn to draw initially. You learned design, and then you learned drawing. And how did that help you? How did that benefit you? Or did it at all?
Yeah. No, I think that would be very interesting feedback to hear. We'd love to hear from you guys out there about that because I think, like David said, it's something of a cliche, but everyone has a story about how they learned design and learned how to draw, and those are interesting. And it's interesting to know the different ways in which. You came to the position that you're in now.
Yeah. So if you would actually like to give us feedback, you can send us a tweet. We are at Helvetic Podcast. You can call us at 707-99-TULIP.
Nice.
You can. I was just remembering that off the top of my head.
It's pretty awesome.
You can. that's 707-99-TULIP.
TULIP.
You can also send us an email. We have a form on our website, or at least we should.
Yeah.
Or you can connect with us on Slack. Tech Reformation has a Slack that they have graciously allowed us a channel in. We are the Helvetic channel on, I think it's, if you go to slack.techreformation.com, you can get an invite and get all set up there.
And you can also drop by David's house any time of the day or night. His address is 1438 East. Wait, what?
Joe, why were you giving your own address? and then lastly, we have the Facebook group, which if you search for Helvetic, I think it's a theology and design group on Facebook. You can find us there. It's something like that. Helvetic, design, theology, maybe the word reformed, maybe not.
I don't know. Yeah. Just ask to join the group and pretty much we will let you in. And we're not terribly discriminating on letting people in, but if someone's going to be obnoxious, they'll get kicked back out.
Yeah. So, like, if you use Windows.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Just kidding. Okay. Yeah. So, definitely, we'd love to connect with you guys that way and continue this conversation. Why don't we wrap up with recommendations, Joe?
Okay.
You already mentioned your recommendation.
My recommendation is the Canvas Podcast. Oh.
I knew you were going to do that I left it in the email.
He put his recommendation in his show notes. So no, my recommendation is actually if you're looking for design resources, a great place to go look is your local library. The Spokane Public Libraries here in our area give you with a library card, give you free access. And the library card is free. They give you free access to lynda.com. Like you can actually access lynda.com, the whole thing. You can't use mobile. You have to use a computer. But that's really the only limitation I've found to it so far.
And with this, we have run into the ground any hope we have of being sponsored by Lynda. How to get it free.
Here's how you get it for free. No, they actually get paid from a grant here. So they're actually getting paid. And so I think it's a good thing for them too, getting good exposure. And then people who are outside of that system hear about it more. Anyway, and they've got just such a great set of courses there. They also have some... like I said, this is our local library, but they have a lot of free learning resources, even some classes that are similar to college classes on doing things like, you know, designing websites and whatnot. So you can really learn a lot that way. And you can also check out books that are relevant to what you're trying to learn too. So that's my recommendation. Just check out your local library.
Wow. Do they still have local libraries?
They do. They do.
My recommendation is Wikipedia. If you if you want to learn about something.
Yeah, just look up. Don't waste your time listening to us. Don't waste your time with college. Go to graphic design, wikipedia.com/graphic design.
Actually, you know what would be
It'll
really...
It'll teach you everything you need to know because there's an entry there.
What would be a really interesting... So let's say you're 18, you graduate from high school. You start a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
To fund you living, like, you know, your cost of living. Mm-hmm. And you are going to spend the next 4 years reading every Wikipedia article that you can in 4 years.
Yeah.
I wonder. I just wonder what would happen.
Somebody did wrote a book about reading. I think they read the entire Encyclopedia Britannica in a year, which Wikipedia is significantly larger, obviously, if you didn't know that already. But yeah, that was their thing. And I think the book was called like Mr. Smarty Pants or something like that.
Huh.
They've done several books like that. Like I think the guy did A Year of Living Biblically. Same guy. Anyway.
I'll have to look that up on Wikipedia. Anyway. so no, my recommendation is Canvas. The podcast called Canvas. It is, I think I might have actually just mentioned this.
I did.
No, I feel like I mentioned this last episode, but I didn't give it a recommendation.
Okay.
It's a show about iPad productivity with Federico Vitici. Federico is known in tech circles for having ditched his Mac and switched over entirely to the iPad. And it's worth noting, our first episode was about me ditching my laptop and switching to an iPad and a 12-core Mac Pro.
Of course.
Joe makes fun of me.
So many cores.
An old 2009 Mac Pro. Anyway, that was what our first episode was about. And since then, Apple has really started to push. I think this was before Apple. We had our first episode before Apple had their conference where they talked about how a lot of people were using 5-year-old laptops and how much better these people would be if they had the new 9.7-inch iPad Pro, which they were announcing.
Yeah, because we did our first podcast before the 9.7 iPad Pro was actually even announced.
And so. then recently Apple has had some commercials. You might have seen them on Instagram or on TV.
No.
If you still have that. And the commercials, basically, they show off some of the iPad features and they say, what could your computer do if it was an iPad? Again, positioning it as a computer, you know, a PC replacement. And then Microsoft responded by showing, well, their response was, we still run Photoshop and my full Microsoft Office. So, you know, what do you
neener,
want, Apple?
Neener.
It's actually kind of clever the way they did it. Props to Microsoft. Anyway, the show Canvas is about how to make the switch from PC or Mac to just using an iPad all the time. If you're a designer, you're probably not going to do that, but you might consider a switch like me where you want a more powerful computer at home and you just want an iPad on the go. They talk about workflows. They talk about to-do list applications is a series they've been running right now. They talk about how to do like advanced things like, oh, I want to send multiple files in, multiple attachments in an email, but I want them to come out of multiple apps or that sort of thing. With things that actually should be simple on a Mac or a PC, but on an iPad aren't necessarily, but there are ways of doing it. So yeah, that would be my recommendation. Even if you just own an iPad, I think this can just make your iPad more useful. And their shows tend to be, well, they started out pretty short, but they tend to be under an hour anyway. So
cool. All right.
All right. Well, I think we can call this we can button this up, Joe.
Yeah. We are so good at ending episodes. So I'd like to end it with a little song. Well,
let me know when the song's coming.
That was it. It's a little song.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yep. Thanks. Bye.
And now for a legal disclaimer.
David and I both work for Olive Tree, a division of HarperCollins Christian Publishers. We produce these podcasts for ourselves, not for our company, and the opinions we express in this podcast are our own opinions and not necessarily those of Olive Tree.